So I would hope that somehow in what I do in my, with my kids and my interactions with them, they would be able to get a sense of the heart of God, and also that way that I believe in them and I know they're capable and I can see their abilities and their strengths.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
All right. Today we are with Eric Gilbert. Eric is first and foremost a husband and a father to two toddler daughters. He's the founder of Rising Calm Center, a place where men can walk through a 10-week program to help them be exemplary leaders in their work and in their life. Today, we're going to be talking with Eric about his experience as a father and some of the actions that he's taking to have a positive impact on his family. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks so much for having me, Tim. Man, it's exciting to be here. I appreciate you hit me up on Facebook, and I'm like, I can't believe I actually get to do this with you and have this interview today.
Tell me your story, your upbringing. What was your own father like?
Yeah, man. So I am one of three boys. I'm smack dab in the middle. So if you've ever been like, I wonder what it's like for a middle child, you can ask me. I'm that guy. So I grew up around Chicagoland area. My dad, hardworking guy. He would actually, it was like about an hour outside Chicago. So he would drive and fight Chicago traffic all the way into the city, fight it back getting home, early mornings, late nights, you know, stuff that it's hard to appreciate when you're a kid in the middle of it, because you just want time with your dad. You want time with your family. In hindsight, it's like, wow, my dad was a hard worker doing all this stuff, trying to contribute for our family, you know? So the great news is both my parents, strong Christians, genuine in their faith for God, right? They didn't always get it right. They weren't always like top of their class, so to speak, but they genuinely wanted to live for God and they genuinely wanted to share Christ with us. So I'm happy to say the first person that I got to see as a man of God in my life was my dad. He was the person that prayed with me. You know, an awesome journey in this regard was he was a person, if I think about it, that was there for my baptism. He helped me with being able to say, I want to live my whole life for Christ. I did that when I was about 10 years old. And then I didn't live a perfect life. So I don't want to give a wrong impression for who I am. I definitely had my messed up high school years and beyond. But then also he was the person that officiated my wedding to my wife, Carol.
That's special.
So yeah, really tremendous thing. So he set me up in a good understanding. He would say, if he was here within the room right now, he'd also say, like, he's had a struggle with, he talked with me the other day about, like, when I look at generalized anxiety disorder, I could look at myself and I see, like, I check almost all those boxes, you know, like, he's got that, he's got some anger issues, things like that. So not doing everything perfect, but overall, an awesome thing I saw was he genuinely would forgive. He genuinely loved my mom. He genuinely loved Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he was, for the most part, doing what he could with us as his sons to raise us up to become men of God.
What would be one of your favorite things about your dad?
There's some random stuff, but my dad could be a person who liked a little bit of competition, and he did like to just be expressive and stuff, right? So my mom actually was the one that reminded me of the story. But this was when we were little kids. We would be at like a Sunday school class and stuff like that. And so my dad was great in being involved with this as well. But I think it was my mom who was actually leading the class, and my dad was kind of just helping out, co-captain kind of thing. But they were putting on, I think it was like praise songs, that kind of thing, right? And so the game was to see who could keep up jumping the longest in the whole group. At the time, I didn't even remember my dad doing this because I was so young, probably like 4 or 5, but my dad had actually like hurt or busted his knee or his leg or something. So he's on crutches and he's doing this on one leg, you know? And he's like, he's just going for it. He's just participating. That's the kind of dad I got. And so he just was jumping with all his little kids, right? And if you've seen kids, it feels like they can go on forever. Yeah. But the one who won the contest, you could probably already guess, right? It was my dad. My dad out-jumped everybody in the room. Between all these little kids, made us put us to shame. And that was a cool thing about my dad, is like he just could go and go with energy. I never felt like if my dad's engaged, you get his whole heart. He was all the way in, man. Again, didn't do it perfect. Some days he was exhausted from work, but it was really cool. Those moments where he came alive, he was there and he set a great example.
What are some of those things that you've taken and applied to your own family that you feel like are positive and impactful?
So when I think of my own family, I got two little girls, right? 2 years old, 4 years old. My wife and I have been married for about 11 years now. Just to give you context of what we got going on with our family, I work full time. I got a business. I got employees. I got an office. My wife, she's a dentist, and she's like, you know what? I don't want to just be a dentist, but I want to be a specialist. So she's an orthodontist. She's going to school again for 2 more years to do all this. So we got a busy household, right? So the things I tried to do and emulate from my dad is he had a really good way to switch gears sometimes. Like, even if my mom did something that was like not very kind with how she spoke it to him, like, Tom, stop complaining and smile. You're here with your kids, right? I remember as a kid, I would hear that and be like, oh my gosh, like who says that? Like, it's so mean, mom. But a neat thing was my dad, especially over the years, he would learn to just take that from her. And he just had a neat process inside of him where he could take it even in that bitter tone. And he'd be able to say like, yeah, let me just put on a smile and laugh with my kids, you know? So I appreciated that of like, he wasn't, yeah, I think if I could say one thing about really what it means to be a father is, you want your wife to feel like a rock star, you know, like that she's got it together. You don't want to challenge her in front of the kids. You don't want to make her feel like, oh, don't listen to your mom. She doesn't know what she's talking about. You want her to feel like, oh, like I love you, children. And the reason I love you so much is because I love your mother so much. Mm. I feel like my dad helped in that area a lot, setting the example for me.
Do you feel like when he experienced those moments, would you call that was his way to love your mom? Or would you say that he easily got over insults, that he was not easily insulted?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combo of both. So there was a time, there was like a huge stain on the carpet. I'm sure one of us kids did something to make this stain happen. And so there's a guy that my dad initially called to like come in and clean it kind of thing. But it was like, I don't know, some kind of price of $200. Mm-hmm. But by the time the guy actually showed up a few hours later, they were able to find some way to clean up the stain, right? So the guy's at the door, my dad's like, oh, sorry, we don't longer need a service. And the guy's like, well, that's fine, but I still got to charge you $80 because this is my service fee call. My dad was like, nope, I'm not paying it. There's no way, no how, he's not paying that bill. And so he basically shoves the guy out of my dad's house. But the funny thing with my dad, right, is he had such a conscious way of, he didn't always get it right, but I think he genuinely wanted people to know that he lived for Christ and he genuinely wanted to try to be like Christ, right? Mm-hmm. So as he yells at this guy and kind of berates him, says like, I'm not paying that bill. You know, he's not cursing, but he's basically like laying it out for this guy. Then he kind of turns around. He's like, and God bless you. He's like trying to patch everything up at the end there. So I feel like he did have a way of switching gears with people and trying to make the most of the moment.
Do you feel like in your own family, do you feel like you have taken that and run with that idea of both the like loving your wife really well in front of your kids and then also easily shrugs off insult? Do you feel like you have that in you, or do you feel like you're different than your dad in that way?
I'm the middle child, so I feel like sometimes you have to learn to navigate through conflict. Both my brothers have strong personalities, at least it feels that way to me. And so sometimes it feels like, well, if we're actually going to get along and make it through this dinner as a family, somebody's got to find a compromise, you know? So I feel like I did take in a lot of his ability to kind of overlook an insult, try to focus on things. And then as I was working on my master's for marriage and family therapy, a lot of it was also trying to, how do you work within systems, within families? How do you try to be able to keep the main thing, you know, so you don't get caught up in the weeds. So I did feel like that helped me a lot, but my wife and I, we have very different personalities, right? So she's Peruvian, South American, passionate, loves food, loves life. You know, I'm more like the chill, like, yeah, I go with the flow, easy going kind of thing. But even our patterns of simple stuff, like, I don't think she'd mind sharing this. She would say she's not a very clean person, right? So she'll leave out dishes and stuff like that. And I'm not like Mr. Clean, but one of those things that I just got used to from growing up and having a busy family was I cleaned up after myself and just kind of like had that ingrained in like a DNA kind of level, you know? And so trying not to bring that stuff up in front of my kids, where it's like, I don't want to be pointing out to my kids, oh, mom left out this dish, or look at the dirty table, or look at this stuff that wasn't done, blah, 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 blah. Because now they're going to pick up on that negativity. They're going to start noticing those things and start to look through a lens of, we see mom in this way because daddy does, you know? So trying instead to be like, okay, if I can, I try to switch gears towards how can we make this a family event or a family exercise, like a team kind of thing. So some of this I got a little bit from, there's a book called like How to Talk So Children Will Listen and How to Listen So Kids Will Talk, right? So sometimes I'll try to use simple concepts of like, I'll just say plates, right? For like clean up the table, you know? I don't have to go into a big spiel. My kids are, again, 2 and 4 years old, so I got to be a little bit realistic about expectations. You know, they're not going to make it perfect, but if they can grab their own plate off the table, it's a start, you know? Yeah. So trying to switch gears to not only say, because in my personality, I would just ignore things and not say anything. Mm-hmm. And I try to get more into like a healthy, kind, assertive way of being as a man so that I'm still speaking up, but not being harsh.
Yeah. Would you say that you would tend to not say something, but inside you kind of get a little bit frustrated or bitter about it?
And I think that's where my dad struggled a lot, was he would just shove it down, and eventually blow up. And that would probably be my default pattern if I'm not careful. So that's what I have to try to consciously fight against, is it feels easier. Again, my wife's Peruvian, she's passionate. So if I say something, I'm probably not going to get her to just be like, yes, dear. You know, I might get a little bit spiced back, you know, and I have to be willing to say it's worth the conflict. It's worth having a moment of tension so I don't build up resentment or bitterness in my heart.
So the first one there, the impacting the family, would be loving your family. Hey, buddy, what's up? I'm talking to Mr. Eric here. You mind walking out?
It's a real dad moment, right? This is a real deal. I know how it is. I got my 4-year-old at home for spring break right now, so she could come knocking at any moment. So this is real life.
So your first one was loving your wife in such a way that you focus on her positives and not exaggerate her faults. That would be one thing that you would say has been a positive for your family.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's helped in so many ways. So my kids don't have that lens of negativity towards my wife, their mom.
So do you work on finding the positives and making sure you say them? I'm like, tell me what that looks like for you to do that.
Sure. Yeah. So if I try to think of all right, this is a little bit of a goofy example, but something that we do in our family is my wife, she'd be glad to tell you she loves a compliment. She loves positive attention, right? So a little running joke inside our family is we try to cue our kids to say certain things, right? So for example, we'll say, what are sisters? And the answer is best friends. So we try to cue that in their mind, so they're saying best friends. So then we say, what is mommy? Our favorite. That's what I try to get them to say. Because she loves it. She loves a compliment. Like, you just see her just radiate with a huge smile. She's so happy to hear our kids say that. And it doesn't bother me, because I'd rather our kids honestly think that and feel that towards her, because it means so much to her.
That's awesome. I love that.
That's just a little practice.
Yeah, that's a really little thing. That's cool. Cool. What else do you do in your family that you feel like has really positively impacted your family as they're growing young children?
Yeah. You know, with my oldest, she's 4, but she really, even from age 1.5, 2, we started to notice she wasn't saying many words. And also her pronunciation was just way off on stuff, right? So she's still in speech therapy to this day, which has really helped her. But I felt like I had to learn to pay close attention to my kids. And I feel like in some ways, because she had that speech impediment, it helped me to get into that discipline. Where rather than just saying like, oh, I can't understand you, what are you saying? Like, just stop or just point, just, you know, rather than just looking for the shortcut of trying to be able to like say, okay, how can I try to decipher what it is my daughter is saying? How can I try to be present with her in this? And like I said, I grew up with 2 brothers. So trying to recognize like girls, this is my experience with my daughter. Maybe other people have it different. But they can whine a lot as little babies, like 0 to 2. Felt like, oh my gosh, my head is going to explode, because I don't like loud noises. I don't like conflict, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of times it was just like, whoa, you know, and
like
so
high stress.
Yeah. And so under high stress, what I tend to do in default is check out. Forget this. I'm done. I don't want to hear it. And trying instead to learn if I turn up the dial and get really intentional with my kids to find out what's not the cry they're making, but what's the cry of their heart? What does they really want? Do they need a hug from daddy? Do they have something deeper that's going on inside? And there's been surprising moments too, where it's like, I thought they were just crying about something stupid, like a toy, you know, but in reality they're crying because they had hurt their knee or something like in that regard. I can think of a few times where I thought it was this, but then I checked the diaper and it's like, oh, this is what's really going on, you know? And being able to say to myself, I got to pay close attention rather than just try to tune it out and just hope that it passes by.
In those moments where you want to kind of shut down, what do you do? Like, what is your proactive measure maybe to sort of avoid doing that, right? Because I know I've been in the same position. I'm sitting at the table at lunch and, man, I have six kids, by the way, and it's like getting crazy.
Wow, good for
you. Like, there's lots of noise going on. And at some point, my brain is like kind of breaks. It's just like, I don't know what to do. I can't think about anything. I'm just quiet now. And I would love to hear if you have any, you know, tips on an approach to
overcome. That's so good. We try to sort through it. And then if we can, like, this is a 2-year-old and 4-year-old, so you probably can relate to what I'm going to say, but dinner time, I've had to gauge my own expectations. I always thought like, oh, dinner's going to be, you know, just my wife looking at me doughy-eyed and wanting to hear about my day and my kids just being like obedient and eating every bite of their food. And I had to like really, because I grew up in a good family, but I didn't grow up around other kids, right? So as I get more into middle school and high school, college years, young adult years, I wasn't around like 2- and 4-year-olds in my life. It was just kind of like, well, I think I've seen videos of them acting good on YouTube, you know, and not around the hot mess of like what really happens at those ages. So
yeah, no, that's very true. I think you're right on that, that there's something about even going, like before you even get to the table, just understanding that I'm at the table with very small humans who don't yet know all the dinner etiquette and sort of the cultural expectations of not yelling in people's ears and, you know, picking my foot up in the air randomly and whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But even when you're talking to adults, there's a degree in which you have to repeat the instructions over the course of time, multiple times.
Yeah.
And for some reason with kids, sometimes we expect that if we just say it the first time, then it should be fine. We're done. I already told you that, you know, don't you know?
Yeah.
I sometimes have strange expectations that I probably wouldn't have, or at least I would have different expectations of adults that I should repeat it over and over again because I want them to learn it. You know, so I would give
I'd be patient with them and say it again and again.
Remember, this is how we do it. This is the process. Remember, we look at this form and we follow this form. Remember that? Yeah, we got to do that again and again and again. And I don't know why that's suddenly different with kids for some reason.
Yeah. And, you know, it kind of goes into the one more thing I would say as far as like what's helped me really with the years and my kids is trying to keep that heavenly perspective on things of how can I keep a big picture about my kids' growth over the years of them becoming adults rather than just what they're acting out in the moment? So like to cherish the little moments. And then also if they're having a blow up moment or an acting out moment to be like, oh yeah, this sucks, especially in front of groups of people. My 4-year-old, for whatever reason, it feels like we get the worst behavior in front of other people. And, you know, at least for me, sometimes as a dad, if you want to see me get more like upset or worked up, like just start screwing up in front of like all my church friends, you know? So being able to recognize that that can happen, but not to be able to be upset about that, but to roll with it.
Yeah.
So.
No, yeah, that's good. Like not placing your own own identity expectations on your children to represent you well all the time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and also to which kind of like keeping the big pictures. Man, my Heavenly Father has been so patient with me with all the times I've screwed up. If I really think about it, and just being able to say, okay, well, what does it look like for me to be patient with my kids in the big picture too, and to cherish the good things, the little things that they do in the day. So little things that I try to do, if I can kind of like give you real quick examples of this,
please,
is, picking up my little girl. She's in preschool now. So I try to play a little game with her because she wants to be on the tablet. She wants to be able to do fun things in the car. And I didn't want to just go straight into like, yeah, just get on your electronic and I'm just going to check out of my mind. So I came up with a little game of her. I call it five things, where she can literally tell me anything about her day. Again, she's got a speech impediment, so she doesn't necessarily want to talk about her day very much with me. I know other kids can be different ways. But I just, like, tell me anything about your day. And she just knows that I'll count it on my fingers and she'll try to encourage me, be like, Daddy, that's three, and, you know, as she tries to like jump a number or something. But I'll just let her get to five with me. And then there's an understanding of like, hey, I really do appreciate hearing about your day. If you want to play a tablet, you can. The cool thing is sometimes she won't even necessarily go into the tablet. She'll just want to play like I Spy or something like that on the road. Because it's just like we're learning to share the moment, share the ride. Yeah. And then one other thing is just seeing my daughter's different personalities and stuff. At night, we try to get them to sleep in the same room, the bed. I don't have the whole sleep routine figured out 100%. So if you got any tips for me on that, Tim, you can let me know that too. But what we try to do is a nightly prayer together. And then do you want me to share it real quick with the prayer?
Yeah, I would love you to share it. Absolutely. Yeah, let me, like, what does that look like for you to do that nightly routine? Like, you do bath time, and then what happens after that?
Yeah, you know, we did like the short circuit version. So ours is like, we take baths probably every other night, to be honest. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like, how can I save time? And my kids don't necessarily love the bath. But we got more into like, okay, let's do the essentials. Let's brush our teeth. Let's be able to see if we can get like a little night story in. And then let's do our nighttime prayer as we get our pajamas on and everything like that. So once we're at the point where they got the pajamas on, we're in the room, we got the lights on low kind of thing for them. The prayer, so you probably heard this one before, right? Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, I pray thee, Lord, my soul to cake. You mm-hmm. heard that one?
Yeah.
As a kid, even in the middle school, I remember that prayer would scare me because I'm like, am I going to die tonight? You know, that was what I heard in the prayer. Like, if I die before I wake, it could happen at any time, you know. So I switched it up a little with my kids. And I'm happy to say as a dad, it's really cool that they've, at least my four-year-old and my two-year-old's kind of working on it. My four-year-old's memorized it to the point where we say it phrase by phrase, and we actually repeat after her now. So she gets excited for it, which is like always nice when it's like you're getting ready for bedtime. You got to have something for your kid to get excited about. Otherwise, you're going to get a bunch of tears. But so what I changed it to was, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. Be with me, God, all through the night, and wake me, Lord, with your morning light. I love you, Jesus. This is her favorite part. Heart, heart, heart. We make little hearts with our hands. And then amen. So not too long, not too complicated, but it has been meaningful and a great way to finish the night and get them out of bed.
So then after that, you give a kiss, tuck in, and then walk out the room, turn the light off. Is that?
That's the idea. Yeah. I've seen different things, you know, especially
as a version.
Yes. They've had good seasons. And then, you know, awesome thing was we got to go to Peru. That's where my wife is from, for Christmas. It's my first time ever being in there for Christmas. I've been to Peru before. And then we also got to bring our daughters. But as you can imagine, you're in different Airbnbs, you're in different places, you're traveling around. At least for me, I haven't figured out the whole hotel life of how to be able to get your kids to stay in that room at this age, you know? So we ended up doing a lot of co-sleeping and stuff like that together. Our girls are old enough that they're safe in the bed with us. It's not like we have to be scared about something happening.
Sure.
But when we got back, so we were there for like 3 weeks, you know? So when we got back in January, it was kind of like trying to get out of that habit back into like a good separate rooms. It's March now. And I still haven't figured that out 100%. So they've gotten too addicted to it. So usually what we end up doing now is I'll say, Daddy, leave, or Daddy, 5 minutes. So, and then 95% of the time, they're going to say to me, Daddy, 5 minutes, which means I'm actually going to be on the bed with them for 5 minutes just to help them settle down and sleep, because they do tend to get worked up. I don't know if it's because the two sisters in the same room, they share like a big queen bed. But that tends to get them more settled down. And then ideally, this would be a good day. I can get up out of that bed and they'll actually just be tired enough and sleepy enough that Daddy's getting up. I try to tell them every time it's 5 minutes, Daddy's going to get up, but a lot of times they'll end up crying, and then they'll be like, "Daddy, don't leave." And I'll be like, "All right, well." And then Daddy's a weakling when it comes to sleep time. Like, I'm just going to pass out if I'm not careful. So, so if I go back to that bed and I'm tired, I might just end up falling asleep there for a bit. And then I'll get up at like an hour later and then go to my wife. So
what is the thing you hope you'll teach your kids by doing these things?
It's not going to sound that far off track from what I got to experience from my dad, is that I would hope that they say, I know my daddy wasn't perfect. He really loved Jesus. He really loved me. He was a good example for, especially with having daughters, of the man, if they decide that they want to be married, right? The man that I'd want to be with for the rest of my life. I want my husband to have some of those traits that my dad did. So I would hope that somehow in what I do with my kids and my interactions with them, they would be able to get a sense of the heart of God, and also that way that I believe in them and I know they're capable and I can see their abilities and their strengths. And even though they're so small, being able to just say, he saw the strength and it helped me to pursue these passions and God-given talents that are placed in me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your program, Faith Over Fear?
Yeah. Thanks for asking about that. So Faith Over Fear, actually, a big reason of developing the whole program was 40 to 50% of like pastors or people in church leadership were going to their medical doctor to say, I need something to help me with my level of anxiety, the level of stress that I'm under. And my heart just really went out to them. I grew up in church. My dad's a pastor now. And I was just thinking, well, man, for people who really want to give their lives and dedicate it to Jesus, and like they're trying to even have leadership within church or ministries, they're struggling with such high levels of stress. I know there's a better way. God's redeemed me from that. He's helped me through my own anxiety. And I want to be able to help set others free from it. There's a way to lead from a place of rest, from a place of peace, from a place that we already know and assured of our salvation.
What does it look like for a man to join your program and walk through it? Give us the step-by-step.
So it's really a 10-week process. My background is with marriage and family therapy. Usually I was working with people for like a year, maybe 2 years at a time. Then I got more into coaching because I was like, there's got to be something that's effective, gets right to the heart of it, can speed up the timeline, can we get right to the pain points, So I developed this Faith Over Fear program to be something that's going to be pretty effective, get really to the root of things and be able to do it quickly. A nice part that a lot of people like that have gone through the program is that you can work directly with me. I have a whole team, but most people want to work with me because they kind of know me. They know what I'm about. And that people can actually see me up to 3 times in a week within those 10 weeks. I'll give you an example. I'll call this guy's name Matt. He kind of called me up when he was saying, I found out that my wife was basically trying to talk with somebody else. She was likely that she was going to cheat on me. It seemed like she's been checked out in our marriage for a while. I don't know how to be able to get her attention anymore. I run a business. I got a team. I'm under a lot of stress with all this stuff. I just don't want to lose my marriage. We have a little girl. So he couldn't turn his mind off at night. He wasn't sleeping well. He didn't know how to talk with his wife about it. It was a deep wound. There was a lot to unpack, right? And so him and I, we came up with that plan of saying, what does it look like to go through the 5 phases of Faith Over Fear? Let's start with being able to get you in a place of personalizing this approach. So we were able to customize, where did this come from? How did it develop over the years? How did it happen in your business? So we personalized things, and then we got into the place of peace, right? I started to be able to say, hey, we're not just going to try to manage your stress. That's not going to work long term. We got to be able to reset your autonomic nervous system. We got to be able to actually get to the heart and soul of what your body is doing on the inside.
Tell me what that is, autonomic nervous system.
So the vagus nerve is this huge nerve that runs connecting from your brain down your neck, down to your heart, and then all the way into your gut, right? So I don't know, Tim, if you ever had a moment where you felt anxious or fearful, do you ever notice where it happens in your body? Like, have you ever noticed, like,
yes.
I have a chain or am I?
In your chest.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times I feel stuff like my heart rate's getting up, my chest is tightening, I'm constricting, all this kind of stuff. And it's because my autonomic nervous system is getting activated. Okay. I like to think of the nervous system in a similar analogy to how we work out or exercise. You know, a lot of times for men, we start hitting the gym and actually using weights and stuff like that for the first time when we were teenagers, maybe somewhere around high school, you know? And I remember that feeling of they actually put some weights on the bar and trying to be able to lift that thing, right? And have control with my form. And it just felt so different. I felt wildly, I felt uncertain what I was doing. That's kind of like the person who hasn't trained their nervous system. They haven't been able to learn, how do I keep my cool? How do I build up muscle, so to speak, in my nervous system so that I can tolerate and handle stress and I can still think clearly, I can still articulate my thoughts, I can still be present to my wife, I can still have difficult conversations, I can still have clarity on what decision to make when it's all on the line, you know? So that's the analogy of the person that's shaking is the person who hasn't trained it, right? But the person that has trained their autonomic nervous system is a person that's like, yeah, go ahead, put a 45 on each side, put another 25 on each side if you have to, and I'm going to be able to get this thing up and off my chest, right? I'm going to be able to control it. Not to say that it's going to be necessarily super easy for me, not to say that I'm not going to feel it, but it's under control. Sometimes these guys have gotten to the point where it's hard for them to even get out of bed. Different walks of life, different places. I work with people in Alabama, Florida, different states, even London, going through this kind of stuff. And time and time again, I just claim that I serve a living God who I believe by faith we can reach out to, and that he reaches out to us and that he's able to change us on the inside in such a deep way. A lot of what I do is also like transformation prayer ministry. It's not just knowing techniques or me just telling you this is the answer, or you even knowing what you ought to be doing on a daily basis. But transformation prayer ministry is being able to listen to God and say, the Holy Spirit is the Spirit of truth. I want to identify what are the beliefs that keep driving my behaviors and my thought patterns, right? So, for example, with a guy named Matt, he kept believing, like, I'm not good enough. My wife's going to leave me, you know? And that place of fear kind of kept driving all these behaviors. I'm checking on her. I'm seeing how she's doing. She's getting annoyed with me because I'm too much, but I don't know how to turn it off, you know? And so what you do then is you just acknowledge to God. And I pray with people. People go through this together. But we acknowledge to God what our beliefs are that we've been holding on to. And then we say, God, I don't want to stay stuck in this belief anymore. I'm giving this to you. Would you speak to me by your Holy Spirit, your Spirit of truth, what it is that's the truth that I need to hear? Right? So I'm just trying to be somebody that's helps to be a carrier, right? I'm just saying, let's go to the throne room with God together. I would say 80% of the time, it's usually the person I'm working with where God's speaking something to them that makes the difference, right? And now they have a fresh perspective. Now they have a fresh approach to life.
What kinds of individuals do you work with?
Yeah, so I'm usually working with men that are giving me ages like 25 to 45. Most of them are business owners, entrepreneurs, people that are trying to work hard. And then also usually they're married. Some of them have been through a divorce or even separation when I'm talking with them. And then they usually have a child, sometimes multiple children, as they're trying to figure out, how do I manage the stress of not only my job, but when I get home, trying to handle my kids, and kind of that whole mentality of how do I handle things? How do I manage things? Is somebody speaking from a place of stress, right? Rather than a place of rest and trust, where it's like, how do I bless my family? How do I bless people through my work, right? That's a shift in how I approach everything.
Yeah. How do I steward what I've got and not just manage it or hold on for dear life?
Yes, exactly. How soon is bedtime? You know?
Now your website is havefaith.co. That's where people can find you. And you have some complimentary items that people can use in their life right now if they go to your website. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm giving away some stuff that usually I don't do it all for free, but I'm like, I got to do something for these listeners. So I put in that quiz that you could take actually to help you with knowing your calling, which of those 10 archetypes, so you can actually see that information of which one it is, the person from the Bible, person from history. I also included in their assessment that's going to help to look specifically at what's the level of stress that you're under, what's the level of anxiety, and also how are you doing in your faith? I'm working with Christian men, and so a lot of times that component of how am I actually doing in my core beliefs is driving a lot of what's been produced in my stressful life. Mm-hmm. So you can do a free quiz assessment there. It's going to give you very specific feedback as well. And then one other thing that I like to do is I've even created 5 spots in my calendar. You can even talk with me directly. So if you want to be able to do like a consultation call, I call it like a transformation session. We're going to get really clear on what exactly you're going through, what's been keeping you stuck, and then what would be the way to help you get the breakthrough that you so desperately desire so that you don't feel like your life is just getting by anymore, but that you're being able to move into more of the path that God has for you. It's all free. And if, again, sometimes I'll talk with, it doesn't happen often, but sometimes I'll talk with somebody and say, it looks like you got a different problem going on here. If I'm not the right fit of what you're looking for, I understand. I'm going to try to give you the best resources I know to help you through this.
That's great. That's great. Havefaith.co, right?
That's the one, man. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, I hope that we get the opportunity to help many men live their life with purpose and to the fullest.
Yeah. God bless you, Tim. Thank you, man.
Yeah. Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.